Hello and welcome to the Microbrew Podcast, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the show. My colleague Kurt Hoag from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is about to get on an airplane home from Arizona, where the Milwaukee Brewers have just, they had a hard time. They lost 2 of 3. I would normally say a West Coast road trip, even as we discussed on last show, whether we call Colorado, Arizona West Coast or not, debatable. But they did go 3-3. Normally, I would say that's fine. I don't know if I say this one is fine. They lost 3 games in which they surrendered go-ahead leads in the inning or later all 3 times. They were unable to capitalize on a Rockies team that is not playing very well and could not sweep them. And then, of course, on Saturday night, had a 4-0 lead in the 9th inning that evaporated very quickly into a gut punch of a 5-4 loss. One of those losses that I don't know if teams, one of those losses, I'm not sure they'll get back. You know, will they steal a game to that degree at some point? Probably. There's a lot of season left, but that was a tough one, Kurt. And it kind of the theme here, and again, 3-3 is not bad. They'll bring a .500 record back home to Milwaukee to face the Detroit Tigers on Monday. But the theme here is the bullpen. The bullpen has really struggled this year. I haven't checked today, but they had the second worst ERA, bullpen ERA in baseball coming into Sunday. That number did not improve. Some runs definitely given up again on Sunday. So I guess it ultimately does end up being a question of personnel if they have the right guys here. It's tough. Yoel Piamps and Connor Thomas are two guys. Thomas on the injured list now, but those guys really contributed highly to that rough ERA number because they've really, really struggled. Piamps was so good these last 2 years. I don't know if this is enough time to really say it's time to move on, but there aren't a lot of guys in that bullpen that I guess I feel like they have faith in, or I personally have faith in. Not a lot of hammers. Nick Mears is pretty good, and McGill probably will bounce back, but feel like there needs to be a little bit of remodeling or something in that bullpen. There's one name that we could definitely say, but just in general, where do you think, I mean, are changes afoot? What do they have to be patient with? What do they not have to be patient with? How do you look at this bullpen right now?
I think there are changes afoot as much as you can do to a bullpen 2 weeks into April. Definitely concerning. Yeah, absolutely concerning. Nick Mears looks pretty good. McGill's implosion aside, I feel like you still have a general idea of what you're getting out of him, although this knee bugaboo that he's dealing with seems to be a little bit of a concern as well. You're not going to feel great. The vibes aren't going to be great about a bullpen after they had the type of implosion that they had on Saturday night. But also, I mean, Yoel Piamps, it wasn't just Saturday night. He completely threw Thursday's game into the dumpster with his 5 runs in the 8th inning. So but that is problem number one right now for sure. The guy that has been pretty reliable for you last couple years. I mean, there was some real blips last year, and they stuck with him before he figured it out toward the end of the year. But like that's your 8th inning guy. That's a reliable 8th inning guy in the last couple of years, and suddenly he's not only unreliable, but he's been flat out bad. He's not missing bats. He's leaving balls over the middle of the plate, and that's leading to hard contact. So major concern bells for me even before Thursday's outing with Piamps. And he's the main one out of those guys, the guys that you need to get important outs that I'm really worried about. The rest of them, Abner, Koenig, Hudson, Mears, some ups and downs early, but mostly you feel good.
Yeah, Piamps, certainly this has been about as bad a case scenario as you can get. You look at his last 2 years, though, we're talking about a guy with a 2.78 ERA over the last 2 seasons combined, well above average in ERA plus. His whip, just 1.01. We're not talking about a guy who was fringe and just kind of getting by, and now that things have gone really south at the team, you'd really feel like, well, it's time to cut bait. We're talking about a guy who's really, really effective, and his stuff is still, I think, okay, but he was just getting pounded around the field both nights, both in Colorado, which, you know, is fair because it's Colorado, but in Arizona, you could say, well, their lineup is great, but he was struggling even before Colorado. So like, I don't know, I guess my personal recommendation, what that would be like, it's hard to have a knee jerk reaction there. I think maybe even going deeper than him though, Who is this team's B bullpen? Who are the guys that you would trust outside of those first few that you mentioned to hold a lead or hold a small deficit? Like Sunday was a good example. They were down 3-2 and Grant Anderson came in and it, you know, he let in more runs. I mean, it's not all on him. It's just, he's, he, you know, Elvin Rodriguez, you could put him in this boat. Like, I'm not positive all these guys, Connor Thomas, like, I'm not positive they're big leaguers. Like, that's really unfair to say. And I know there's some talent in there, but I don't know if the Brewers have, like, really the guys that they're going to rely on even in June on this roster, other than those top couple that you mentioned. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, the B bullpen right now, the guys that you feel good about on that secondary unit, they're on Broadway right now in Nashville.
That's Nashville, Tennessee, yes.
They're listening to Carrie Underwood. Does Carrie Underwood still get played?
I think so. She has her own channel on Sirius, Kurt. Sirius XM. Oh, okay.
Well, I'm out of
the loop. She's a big deal.
I think, though,
she's
bar.
More.
How about that?
I like that. Isn't it Brad Paisley's bar?
Well, everyone has a bar.
Everyone has a bar. I think she was everyone married to a hockey player. I think Carrie Underwood is more NHL adjacent. NHL adjacent.
Yeah, Mike Fisher of the Nashville Predators. Go Preds.
Go Preds. Hockey. Now that Hockey Corner's been covered. Well, I mean, let's just, can we say the name Craig Yoho again to check it off our bingo card? Craig Yoho needs to be in Milwaukee. Like, I honestly, I'm not surprised that they didn't, like, bring him up immediately after that deadline where you've less than 172 days left and this won't count as a full season. But please get him here to Milwaukee. Like, he pitched on Sunday, so I don't know if that's going to happen. Doesn't seem like it then. But one of your best relievers is not on this team, and you need relievers.
Yeah, you can contort it a variety of ways in your mind to sort of describe or understand or make sense of why he's not here right now. But ultimately, if you want to win games, this team's motto is win tonight. And there are two games this weekend that they would have had a better chance of winning had he been on the team. Maybe they would have lost both. Who knows? But certainly one of their eight best relievers right now. You can't even argue the service time thing because that's out the window. So I think it'll happen soon. And I am excited for it. I can't believe it only took us 7 minutes to get into that. There are a lot of other big stories with this team right now. But of course, on this podcast, there's only one story.
It's Craig Yoho.
Sure, that's right. Yeah. He better be good.
After we talked him up, can you imagine? Can you imagine if he gets into a game after we've been pining for this and then he gives up four runs right away? I mean, what will we say? Will we just have a silent podcast, like a moment of silence that lasts about 45 to an hour?
Yeah, it'll be the same cone of shame that I had when. Can you hear all of this, by the way? I'm at an airport.
Oh, yeah, in the airport? Yeah, it's very clear. It's clear.
Oh, great. I'm hearing about. I love this.
Oh, I now know where to use the bathroom. It's right across the hall, somewhere in Sky Harbor. It's fantastic.
Dude, are they going through, like, the basics of boarding an airplane?
Please stay in a single file line, because the door only allows one person through at a time. That's not what she said, but that's what I'm imagining.
Like the longest airport announcement of all time.
This is what we do for the podcast,
we could just
though.
Deal with them. Yeah, I figured we could deal with them because it's more normally like 8 seconds. You know, boarding at this gate now. Line up this group. No restroom instructions, JR. That's actually what we're gonna play for an entire podcast if Craig Yoho comes up. And he gets shelled, which, hey, yes, it's possible.
It could happen.
This is not the single fix to the Milwaukee Brewers bullpen woes right now. But the starting pitching, though, the starting pitching has been good.
Yeah, I think it's ironic that the bullpen, not ironic, it's just sort of a bummer this hasn't all come together, because the starting situation, for as dire as it seems, body count wise, has absolutely held it together. Chad Patrick now with three great starts. He just outdueled Corbin Burns. They share a number, by the way, you might have heard. Maybe we'll get to that at three up, three down. Chad Patrick has had three very solid starts, not working deep into games, but doing everything that's asked of him. Tyler Alexander has looked really good. And then Jose Quintana is up. Plus, you have good updates on Tobias Myers and Brandon Woodruff. You know, those guys are going to be coming back in the not too distant future. But the Quintana debut on Friday was really, really special. Brewers end up winning that game 7-0. Quintana, in his first start of the year, looked ultra sharp. I mean, looked really good, Kurt. Way better than I thought. You know, this is a guy that I envision in my head just nibbling and the Brewers rolling over on slow grounders and getting out and having, looking up at the end of the game and, oh, he gave up one run on four hits in seven innings. But, like, he looks awesome for a 36, 37-year-old guy. And as you wrote at jsonline.com, Pat Murphy sure is happy to see this guy wearing a Brewers uniform.
Well, I don't think Pat Murphy's necessarily alone in that regard.
No.
I do feel like I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop on some of the Brewers starting pitching. Like, they're going to get their guys back. They're going to get Myers back probably not this upcoming week, but probably the next. I would think he has one more start left unless they say screw it, but that seems to be the plan. Who knows exactly when with Woodruff, but certainly in the next 30 days because that clock is ticking. So I guess that is one shoe that's dropping. But I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop on some of these results that it's a lot of batted balls that are going in the right direction. So the results have ended up great. And guys are generally pitching well and then maybe getting results that are a little above the level to which they're pitching. Like Chad Patrick, one run in 14 innings. He's doing a great job. He's doing a fantastic job filling in a role no one foresaw him filling in. And I do think he understands how to make pitches and sequence and all that stuff, and that helps him. But he's not striking guys out. A lot of fly balls were hit pretty far, but right to gloves this weekend. I'm not sure all of it is super sustainable, but maybe it doesn't have to be. Like, we just wanted to, so like, okay, if the Brewers can survive this stretch, they'll be fine setting up, when these other guys come back. And right now they've survived it. So, hey, they're fine.
Yeah, and I mean, like, we kind of just breezed past it, but this McGill knee issue could open up a spot all by itself, and there won't even need to do a whole lot of roster maneuvering to get some guys up here from the relief side. And then, you get Myers back, and yeah, Brandon Woodruff, you get him back. Like, he finally had a rehab outing, which I think is probably some of the best news of the week. It wasn't like lights out, but it was pretty dang good, sitting at 94. Got a handful of strikeouts in 3 2/3 innings at Nashville. There's obviously a long way to go with him, but not that long. Like, you could see mid-May, right? Like, I mean, is that still feasible to see Brandon Woodruff, or is that a little too optimistic? I mean, they did not put him on the 60-man injured list. So I've always had mid-May kind of circled. After that first rehab outing, do you feel like we're headed in that direction, or should we be even more patient?
Yeah, early to mid-May. I mean, it has to be 30 days from Saturday unless something pops up, and that would be very bad. So it has to be by May. Would that be May 12th, May 11th? One of those days, he would have to be off his rehab assignment, and you can return a guy to the injured list from his rehab assignment, but obviously that's not the intended goal here. So that's not that far away. He did look pretty good. I think people need to understand that the version of Brandon Woodruff that we're going to see early on is not the full version that we're used to seeing. He's going to have to pitch a little differently, not entirely. Like, the fastball is still going to be the bread and butter. It's just not at 98. It's going to be at 93 to 94 most of the time.
Another addition to the rotation was made this week when the Brewers, very early in the week, Monday, traded for Quinn Priester, former Pittsburgh Pirate. You may remember him from that. Of course, he was with the Boston Red Sox. And boy, we have not talked about this trade. We elected not to go emergency podcast, Kurt. I don't know how I feel about that. I feel like we could have. We could have gone emergency.
I don't think Quinn Priester. You got to save that for the big leagues. You got to save that when Josh Hader gets traded, when Devin Williams gets traded. Quinn Priester coming to Milwaukee kind of feels like a big deal in the moment because you don't get those April trades. But we gotta save those for when we need them.
Fair enough, but then we have to discuss the ones when they happen, as they do, like this one. This one, fascinating. First of all, great start for Quinn Priester. We saw him this week in Colorado. He gave up a leadoff home run. I compared it to the Tobias Myers debut, where he gave up a leadoff home run and then settled for 5 very effective innings, did not give up another home run or another run at all. Brewers, that's the game they go on to lose, but still, really impressive debut for him. I think the trade has been discussed a lot. The Brewers gave up a ton for this guy. They gave up Yofury Rodriguez, a 19-year-old prospect that we have talked about before. I think at one point we thought maybe that's like the next Jackson Churio in terms of prospects ascending like lightning through an organization. I think ultimately, that isn't quite where we landed with him, but he was still very highly regarded, a top 10 prospect in this organization by most metrics. And that was a lot. But you also throw in, there's a player to be named later. We don't even know the extent of that. Plus, a competitive draft pick, a competitive balanced draft pick that's going to go to the Red Sox. Brewers had six of the top 100 picks in this upcoming draft. That would give them a ton of bonus pool money to play with, give them a chance to really go after some real high level guys. And they just gave some of that up. They gave like 2 point whatever million of that up to include in this trade for a pitcher who, I mean, they needed a starting pitcher. And this guy's got 6 years of team control, could be a really valuable long-term play, but it relies on the Brewers finding something that other teams have not. His numbers have not worked, have not been good at the major league level. He's made some tweaks, but it relies on them finding a diamond in the rough. And the whole point of finding a diamond in the rough is that you don't pay diamonds to get a diamond that was lost in the rough, if you know what I mean. Like, you're not supposed to pay a premium for the guys that might have a kernel of something in there that you can unravel. So I want to know what you think about this trade. There's a secondary component that we'll talk about too. Obviously the first start is good, but they needed starting pitching. They are short a bunch of starting pitchers, but also not forever, like we talked about. So fascinating maneuver to me.
Yeah, well, I don't think they gave up diamonds necessarily in this trade.
No, but I agree with you.
Rodriguez is an interesting prospect, but my take on him is more of like a fourth outfielder. I don't think there's like a carrying tool here, and that's something that I like to think about a lot. It's like, what's the carrying tool that's going to make him an above average or even an average regular? And I don't know it's in there. Like, he's got a decent hit, not a ton of power, but some. He runs well, but not incredible. His arm's pretty good. It might be the arm, but that's not. You don't want that on toys with the carrying tool. So I don't know. I saw Rodriguez more as like a safer prospect, if you can say that. For what? Has he turned 20 yet? Still 19?
I don't believe so.
Turns 20 this year, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, those prospects are not safe by any means, but a more safe profile than, say, like a Luis Peña or Braylon Payne or something at that level. So the interesting part is, like, the Brewers, I mean, they could use a player like that in a few years, no doubt. They're going to be losing the current crop of outfielders they have in the next, you know, 4 years-ish timeline. So they'll cherry at that point and then be kind of figuring out the rest as they go. You can, at least I can kind of see where the math on it. That's how these trades happen. Let's be frank now. They happen with the math, with the model. You can see why, you know, if their model liked Quinn Priester and they think they're getting a good pitcher, this price does make sense. The draft pick is significant capital. But also, on the whole, I don't know what the 33rd pick? What would you say on average, like a career WAR for the 33rd pick is?
Oh, that's a good question. No, it's
three WAR.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right. You're probably right.
I mean, yeah, it could be Gunnar Henderson. Sure, it could be. Or it could be like, I mean, if they had thrown Blake Burke in the trade, I would probably still say they'd maybe paid a little too much, but
okay. But we're not talking about actually Blake Burke, because Blake Burke's a good example. He was a guy that was drafted because they could sign him under slot. We're talking about the money. The money here is what sort of bakes into.
Yeah, but I don't think that's as, I don't know if that's as big of a deal in just in like the modern draft necessarily. Like, teams have such a good idea of what they're doing going into it that I don't know. Like, they had all the money in the world last year, and they still couldn't sign Lavonis. So
that's right.
The money is not a non-factor for sure, but it's another player you're not getting, and who knows? Maybe they don't like that pick. That's just like, I don't know. Maybe they just, because they still have what, five picks in the top 120 or whatever you said, they still feel like their strategy is going to work, and then. I don't know. They end up getting guys late in the draft too that they pay a lot of overslot money for. So you could kind of see how this works in the Brewers model. That's the boring part of it, right? Boring part of it, right, is how much did the Brewers, like, was it a good deal? Did they overpay or not? Because we don't know. We don't know what Quinn Priester is going to end up being. The only thing that matters is if they're right about it or not. Because very clearly they're not trading for this kid as a
as a, you know, a flyer. Like, they're trading for him as like, oh, we're going to get five quality starting years out of you. And if you can get 10 wins out of that,
that's, yeah, no,
they,
you're
they're
right.
They're going to probably win the trade. And so maybe that's what they see, but it's, well, that's far from a guarantee. Very far from a guarantee.
Yeah, I think what's important to point out is that the Quinn Priester that we have seen in the big leagues is not going to get you 10 wins over the next 5 to 6 years. He's not going to be a big leaguer in 5 to 6 years. So they have to know something, and they have to, I don't say they have to be right. We'll never know, because not even just because, I mean, Yofiri Rodriguez, we can trace his progress, but the draft isn't just about the individual picks. It is sort of a holistic approach. And if they sign a guy or their guys and they didn't end up needing that $2 million, then it doesn't matter. And they'll have a starter for now and for later. Like, they could send Quinn Priester down to the minors in 3 weeks when guys come back and work on whatever they want to work on, and still have him be an effective pitcher for them this year and beyond. So they do have some options there. In a way, he is still a little bit of an unrealized prospect, but I don't know, man, Kurt, I you've made me feel a little better about it, but I still just feel like they gave up an awful lot there, which is unlike them. They usually hug on to those prospects as long as they possibly can.
It's a good job by Boston for sure, but you're right. It does feel like, I mean, they essentially, what they're doing is they're taking a flyer on a guy.
They are.
I think
an expensive flyer.
Yeah, the Brewers have a relatively high valuation on Priester, which makes the deal in their mind worth it, obviously. But it is a bit of a surprise, yeah, that Priester didn't, because I'm almost certain that across the industry, he probably was not valued at that level. That would be a significant surprise. But another thing about this trade that's kind of fun is it's a mid-season April look at how teams are like evaluating pitching, how you're projecting things. It's totally based on what the Brewers model tells them, essentially, and that model is sort of based on the strategy that they've implemented over the recent years of different fastballs, and it's based on a guy's like stuff grades largely, and if they think that they can do this with that and tweak this here, and who knows, maybe like the increased velo or this new cutter, I haven't looked at the stuff plus grades on it from his start, but maybe they think, hey, yeah, that's going in the right direction, and no one has caught on to this yet, and before they do, let's catch on to it and try to get him. So this is the sort of move the Brewers have to make, I think, and you look forward to the near future, and they don't have a lot of retainable starting pitching either. Right. So that's also part of it. A lot of moving pieces that don't necessarily like come to your mind right away when they made the deal, because yeah, on face value, it's like, what are they doing? This guy's not any good, and who knows how good he actually is. He has been very bad in his career, but sometimes things happen with pitchers. And the Brewers are taking a bet on it.
There's as I mentioned, a secondary aspect to this, which we have touched on maybe a little bit, but we could talk about it more now. And that's the decision they made in December to not protect Shane Smith on the 40-man roster. He is a guy who was, I wouldn't say a top flight prospect in the organization, but people had noticed. People noticed that this guy was showing some pretty impressive stuff, capable of probably helping the big league team at some point in 2025. They left him unprotected. The White Sox made him the first overall pick in the Rule 5 draft, an indication that, you know, if your guy goes first, it means he's, you know, that's a pretty top level guy that was available. And he has now made 3 starts for the White Sox. He's 0-1 if you want to look at the win-loss record, but he's got an ERA almost right around 2 at this point. He lost out to Garrett Crochet, who almost threw a no-hitter against the White Sox on Sunday. He's looked very, very good for 3 starts. So good that you have to start asking if the Brewers made just a colossal mistake. And you don't know ultimately why they would have evaluated it to a point where they wouldn't protect him. They did decide to protect Chad Patrick, who also has had such a great start to the season. Maybe that was the choice. Maybe it was, you know, either him or Tyler Jay, the left-handed reliever, who they ultimately ended up cutting, you know, just really a few weeks later, I believe, maybe a month later. So It looks like a mistake in the short term. Now, I also go back to 2017 when there was a relief pitcher named Miguel Diaz, whom the Brewers left unprotected. He went to San Diego, and he had like four amazing starts out of the gate. He had a zero ERA through his first four big league appearances. This is very small samples. This is like four innings. And then things fell apart for him. And to this point, he's still, I don't think he's in the big leagues this year, but he's been bouncing around. But he's a journeyman reliever whose numbers are not very impressive. Ultimately, the sample evened out. I know people were really worried about Miguel Diaz, just like people are really worried about Shane Smith. But if they had kept him, granted, they had no way of knowing the number of injuries they would take in the starting rotation. If they had kept him, like a lot of people thought they should, they'd have another starting pitcher right now. They wouldn't have had to make a trade for Quinn Priester. They wouldn't have had to panic about digging deep and trying to, Chad Patrick, who again has worked out, or Tyler Alexander in these spot starts. Like they wouldn't have had to go that route. So that's starting to look like a worry. I guess I'm wondering how big of a worry is it? And if you have, how much time you need to give it before you look at Shane Smith and say, yeah, that guy's a dude.
It's a pretty big whiff. It's a pretty big whiff.
Sure seems like it, man. Oh boy.
I mean, it seems worse probably than it is right now. He's not going to be, I mean, he's not going to throw five shutout. I feel like every start for him has been, he's throwing up zeros through five and then runs into a little trouble in the sixth.
Uh-huh.
Not totally unsurprising for a young starter. But for a team who stockpiles depth and needs that depth and wins with that depth, to just kind of let a guy in the rule five eligible, who's almost big league ready as a starter, not a reliever, a starter. Like, there's a reason that they're running this Jacob Mizorowski starter thing until they can't anymore. And this Aaron Ashby starter thing until they can't anymore. Because it's super valuable to have homegrown, affordable, cost-controlled starters. And so to not protect him when I think they had two spots open on the 40-man heading into the winter meetings, and they filled those up, maybe two or three, but no more than two, but still two. And they filled those up with obviously Connor Thomas, and then they signed Grant Wolfram, who has since been DFA'd. Those are some misses in the pitching evaluation. I know that the industry and like even us weren't calling, screaming for Shane Smith to be added.
Right.
There was, I think I ranked him like in the mid to low 20s in my prospect rankings that I did in July. He probably would have finished a tick higher than that because the stuff kept ticking slightly up. But there was starter potential in there for sure, just from like what we saw from him. But also the Brewers are the guys that should have seen what the White Sox saw. And maybe we're giving too much credit for the White Sox. Maybe they got lucky. That's very plausible. I can't rule that out. This is the White Sox. But they were confident enough to take the guy with the first overall pick. They might have seen something the Brewers didn't. Obviously that's not a great sign because the White Sox jumped on the guy that you didn't protect and were like, yeah, this guy can start. And they were right about it. So it is a miss. It was not an obvious ad, but still, when you're the Brewers, those are the sort of evaluations that you got to hit on. And at the very worst, he's a serviceable depth starting arm. And boy, we know those are always in need.
Yeah, I mean, again, if they had added him, it's not like they had to have him on the big league roster. They could have waited it out, see what they have, see what they need. And, He would have been sure come in handy. You're right. The only thing you could say about Tyler Jay and Connor Thomas, who were maybe other guys that they were sort of debating with, those guys are left-handed. I mean, that's the only thing I could think of. Connor Thomas, again, as a Rule 5 guy, supposed to be kind of big league ready. We have not seen that in the limited amount of time that we have seen him, but now he's on the injured list. Maybe he was being bothered a little bit by an injury. You hope that because the numbers have been just so bad in his limited work. I mean, you got to credit the Brewers for some decisions that they did make. Chad Patrick was not in that prospect ranking, but he had the production at AAA. So having Chad Patrick, putting him on the 40-man and then seeing those results work out right away, like that was not a no-brainer. And now they have this guy who wasn't a no-brainer pitch three starts for them, doing quite well. So they made some good calls too, I guess.
Go ahead, yeah, I don't like comparing Shane Smith to Connor Thomas because they took Connor Thomas after they knew they weren't going to have Shane Smith. But like,
No, now that I think about it a little bit, you took Connor Thomas knowing you had to keep him on the roster the entire season. You took him as not a project Rule 5 arm, but a Rule 5 arm who's big league ready, and he's hurt right now, his elbow's been flaring up. Arthritic elbow, JR. That's not what you want.
Not good. Not good.
That's no, suboptimal. And like you took him as a guy who's going to be on your big league team all year, at least most of the year, to give you some valuable depth and length out of the bullpen. Shane Smith is not in an entirely different boat. Like, they're not similar necessarily as pitchers, but you wouldn't have had, like, you would have spent the 40-man spot on him, and you wouldn't have had to roster him the entire season. And maybe even his projection in October, November was like, possible spot starter down the road in the big leagues. Could end up being a middle reliever who's fine. And that's not a whole lot different than, like, the best case for Connor Thomas, who they ended up taking. So, we're relitigating an old move, but it was a miss.
Yeah, I mean, we're relitigating it because it's very clear Shane Smith is big league ready, and they just did not evaluate him as big league ready, or they would have put him on the 40-man roster. So, like you said, that's a big one for an organization that can't just go out and buy new pitchers without paying a premium like they did for Quinn Priester. They absolutely could use that guy, and right now they don't have him. We should touch on a couple more good things before we get to three up, three down. I know this airplane is going to want you on it soon enough, so we got to move this along. Bryce Terang, I think this is getting awfully real. This is a lot of balls leaving his bat at 90 plus miles per hour. It's getting to the point where it's a sample big enough that I am prepared to say, Kurt, that they're I shouldn't say anything, but like he's a better hitter, man. He's just a better hitter. He looks better. He's hitting the ball hard. The damage is going to be up. He hit a ball 444 feet, which I did not think he had in him, but he destroyed a baseball Tuesday at Coors Field. Coors Field makes a lot of people look like heroes, but Bryce Terang is playing very well, hitting very well. I would say defensively, actually, we have not seen the best of him, but he's still obviously fine. So, oh man, Kurt, I think Bryce Terang, the Brewers' commitment to Bryce Terang is another move that you got to give him a little bit of credit for.
Yeah, you do. 100%. This is probably the best case with his bat. There's real meaningful damage in there. He's not going to finish the year in the 90th percentile of exit velocity like he is right now, but if he finishes in the 60th percentile, that's still some real damage. Even the 50th percentile, like, we're talking about a guy who was probably what, 12th, 15th percentile exit velo last year. There's a ball he hit Sunday where it looked like it was just such an easy swing, and he kind of tricked Lourdes Gurriel on it a little bit in left field. The ball just jumped off the bat and kept carrying. It ended up being out, but those are not the types of swings and the types of batted balls that we saw from him often last year. And you're getting multiple hard hits a game. You're getting some damage in there. Yeah, give the Brewers credit for sticking with him. I think the defense, frankly, made it easy to stick with him. But Pat Murphy didn't lose hope in the bat either. And so we're seeing some. Hey, he got snubbed with the All-Star last year. Maybe it's a mix this year, maybe?
I mean, 100%, if he hits like this, it will be in the mix, because the defense is still, even if the defense hasn't been what it quite was last year, it is going to be regarded as very good, and it is still very good. A couple more things on offense, and then we'll finally get up to three up, three down. We saw William Contreras break out this week. He was really slumping. He hit three home runs on this road trip. He looked very good again. Christian Yelich hit a couple dingers, including an absolute rocket, 460 plus feet in Colorado. Again, thin air does that. I think he hit one there last year that was pretty majestic. But he looks a little better. I would not feel fully comfortable saying Christian Yelich is at full capacity, but he's looking a lot better.
No, well, not this weekend.
No, this weekend was quite bad.
I thought he hit a ball really hard off Corbin Burns, 110 miles an hour right to the shortstop, but this weekend was not good at all. It was very, very subpar at bats.
So I was going to ask about him and also Rhys Hoskins. Rhys Hoskins has really been rough, and I just wonder if you see, is there hope for him? I mean, it's obviously too early to write it off, but like at this point, we just haven't seen the version of Rhys Hoskins who played in Philadelphia. And I don't know if you feel a certain way about where they're headed with him, if this is going to, you know, turn around at any point, and how you feel about Yelich as well, because it is starting to become a broader sample, even though he did look like he was turning a corner for a little bit, a broader sample of struggle. Joey Ortiz too, who's got like one extra base hit this year and hasn't played particularly well. Like, I don't know how you feel about those three guys. The offense could really use those additives.
Yeah, I think Rhys Hoskins is probably the main topic here, just because there has been essentially nothing productive from that spot. He's hit a few balls hard here and there, but the OPS is under 500. There's a lot of uncompetitive at bats, and there's a little too much swing and miss. So, not a lot of signs of positivity looking forward, other than hopefully he figures it out. Hopefully he finds the power stroke. He didn't hit his first extra base hit of the year until, I believe it was Friday night. He doubled on the left field line at Chase Field. So, yeah, that is probably concern number one, is the Brewers may very well end up with below replacement level production at first base yet again. The other guys, for sure. Yeah. Those are good mentions too. Yelich's at bats this weekend were, I don't want to say alarming or concerning, they just weren't very good most of the time. A lot of weak contact, rollovers to first base and second base, and we've seen that before when he's not going right. So that's I don't know, maybe like a 5 out of 10 on the concern there. Hoskins, 7 to 8. And then Joey Ortiz, I'm not really sure what to make of it, just because we're still not entirely sure of like what player he is on offense. He has some interesting ingredients, and we just haven't seen them in play really at all this year.
I love how you finished your point real fast, because the overhead, the disembodied voice started coming after us again. It's like, let's talk real quick and get it over with.
I gotta make sure I'm not missing my flight.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. I don't want you to miss your flight, Kurt. I want you home. So that you can watch the Brewers and the Tigers on Monday, as they kick off their next home stand here.
I might be asleep.
But you're not going to be there on Monday, but maybe Tuesday or Wednesday, day game on Wednesday. All right, let's move out of the main part of this conversation. We'll go into some of the more granular details from the week. Here we go. It's our weekly segment, 3 Up, 3 Down. Kurt, I'm going to go first. Tyler Alexander, who I think looked incredible. I really, like, even the results maybe weren't as good as I thought he looked again in Colorado. He was just dotting the zone. He looked perfect. He made also a behind-the-back catch on Wednesday. It's one of those plays that, it's not like it's completely novel. It happens every once in a while, but there was a line drive screamer, and he just casually reached behind his back and snagged it out of the air. And he was really low-key about it. It was just like, yeah, of course I caught it. Love the reaction. Just trotted back to the dugout. That was the third out of the inning. He has been exactly what they hoped he would be. I was very skeptical. I guess I still am skeptical of that as a free agent signing, but I cannot argue with one bit of the results. He has looked very solid. You know, it's not long starts, but he is getting them a few innings, and made that great catch. It was definitely one of the highlights of the week.
All right, I'll pick it up. Let's talk about the most important thing with the Brewers right now. It's that Jackson Chourio hasn't walked.
He has not taken one walk.
Zero. I thought he was going to do it twice on Sunday. There was one spot where he got to 2-0 and then took ball three, but the umpire called it a strike, and the next pitch he flew out on. And then there was a full count in, I believe, his last at-bat. He struck out to end the game, but his penultimate at-bat, and he struck out on a changeup. That was just below the zone. 73 plate appearances, 0 walks. I wrote about it just now on jsonline.com. It is not the longest streak to start a season in Brewers history. That belongs to Jim Aducci.
Shouts to Jim Aducci.
He did, I think it was like 97 or something, played appearances, but that spanned his entire season. He did not walk once the whole year and barely played, apparently. So the Chourio's not quite there yet, but like 25-ish played appearances away, that's 6 games for him. That's yeah, not that much.
No, he is mashing the ball. That's another decision that the Brewers made, signing him to a long-term deal. Continues to look amazing. He hit a couple absolute beauties of home runs, again, in Colorado, in Arizona, just like hanging, breaking ball, crush, crush, crush. It was gorgeous. But that will catch up to him. The lack of patience will catch up to him. I don't imagine it's going to be a problem. I think he'll develop that right back and figure out a way. I think right now he's just seeing pitches and he wants to hit them, and I don't blame him because the success is there, but he will have to figure that out, because otherwise it's going to catch up to him. My number two is a reference I made earlier. Chad Patrick, love that he is wearing number 39, which of course is the number that Corbin Burns wore with the Milwaukee Brewers. Corbin Burns was able to, this is a head-to-head matchup with Corbin Burns. He was able to do some things, but the Brewers scored a couple runs against him, against Corbin Burns. Meanwhile, Chad Patrick gave up nothing, gave up a lot of hard hit balls, gave up base runners. His whip is still like 1.3. Like we said, Chad Patrick, he's not going to have that like one earned run allowed as a starter for long. Like this is not sustainable. But he does sort of win that duel. Now, of course, this is the game where the Brewers gave up 5 runs in the ninth and lost. So the Diamondbacks walk away with the victory. But love the sort of serendipity. Corbin Burns has been, I think, really, you know, Burns has been kind of up and down mostly, I guess, in his first few starts with Arizona. It hasn't been awesome for him. I noted Willy Adames also with San Francisco was really struggling. Devin Williams has been really up and down with New York. He left for paternity leave for a little bit. But like the guys that the Brewers lost recently, the studs, it hasn't been great. And the Brewers, I thought, were in position to capitalize on it with Burns. Fortunately, they couldn't seal the deal. But just a great story. Chad Patrick continues to be. We'll see how long it goes. But right now, he gets the best of his fellow number 39. I thought that was kind of cool.
We should probably talk about Saturday's. I only have so much time here. But we should talk about Saturday's ninth inning, maybe a little more. Specifically, the walks in there. Well, first, the decision. I'm not sure what you thought of the decision to go with Hyams instead of McGill. Like, there is the fact of McGill's knee that kind of complicated things a little bit. But he was, like, if you're going to pitch him in a 3-run game, just pitch him in the 4-run game, too. And if he's, like, I understand trying to stay away from him, but if he's on the active roster, that means he can pitch. So I don't love staying away from him in a 4-run game. That's just me. And then the walks to Gabriel Moreno and Garrett Hampson, the 4 pitches, that 4 fastballs from McGill that weren't even close. I don't know about you, but that's when the Hampson walk was when the game felt like it was over.
Yeah.
For me, I started.
You can't walk Garrett Hampson. He's the 9 hitter. You got to get him out. My goodness.
You can't walk either of those guys. 2 balls into that count to Hampson, I started rewriting my story.
Yeah. It was tough. I mean, I understand, like Pat Murphy has said this before, that he kind of considers a 4-run lead on the road to be basically the same thing as a save situation or close to it. I believe that's what he has said. I feel like, though, like I said, Yoel Piamps has been a reliable reliever for 2 years. And yes, he is down right now. But if you cannot trust him in a 4-run game in the ninth inning, then he can't be on this team. Like that's something you have to be able to hold down, especially like you said, if your closer is nursing an ailment. Maybe it doesn't work out to have Trevor McGill come into the middle of that inning. Maybe it just whatever that alchemy wasn't a good idea. That's a tough thing to read. That's just knowing the pitchers and how they respond to certain things. That's very, very tough. I think if you've got a 4-run lead and Yoel Piamps and Trevor McGill at your disposal, you will win that game so often. So the fact that they couldn't execute, I think it was kind of rare, actually. I mean, I think if you brought those two guys in a situation, the exact same situation, they would execute more often than not, especially after Piamps got the first guy out. Like that's how does that happen? How does that happen? That is a loss they will not get back. They will not do something that dramatic. I would imagine. And I know I said earlier maybe they would, but that's a really bad loss. I think it's my turn though for number 3. Kurt, I have fallen in love with the Carolina Mudcats. I know we talked about Josh Adamczewski last week. Jesus Mate hit his first career home run in the minors this week. I have started paying attention to low A baseball. This is a fool's errand. This is partially your fault. You're the one who has made me fall so completely in love with this baseball team. They are very, very fun to watch. So many prospects, so many interesting names. They are very good. They hit the ball all over the park. Definitely something that has caught my attention. And I am really looking forward to watching this team grow up a little bit, because there is a possibility that there is a lot of the next great Brewers team. I mean, there'll probably be some good Brewers teams between then and now. There's a possibility that those guys are going to be stars. I'm very excited about this. Carolina Mudcats, follow along. You're up. Give me your last one. You still thinking?
I'm listening.
Oh, because
gate agents
for this plane.
Uh, to make sure I'm not being left behind. No, they did not say my names. The Carolina Mudcats are very interesting. I think it's very funny that you are jumping fully into the prospect copium of the universe.
Mm.
Surely this won't come back to backfire on you. Yes, these Carolina Mudcats will be the structure of the next great Milwaukee Brewers team. That is what's going to happen. Of course, because that's every wave of prospects. But joking aside, they are super fun to watch. I think Josh Adamczewski is going to be a really good player, and he's not ranked on a lot of lists right now, but he's probably top 20 in the system. I would say that point blank from what I've seen early this year, and that's just the tip of the spear with that group. I'll finish up my end of the spectrum, JR, with some new young Brewers killers. Brenton Doyle has gone to the very top of this list. He was sort of, I think he was teetering at the top, like a guy like, oh, well, they can't get this guy out. And now it's full on. He's in the upper echelon after what he did to the Brewers in Denver this week. They have a really, really bad team, but he's a really good player that I'm sure they will assign to some sort of extension and not trade when they should. Mm-hmm. So, hey, that's Ryan McMahon, too. Wow, crazy.
Wise.
How they end up doing this, and this is why they're bad. But the other name, JR, is Geraldo Perdomo. You thought Ketel Marte was out this week? No. He transferred his powers to Geraldo Perdomo, and he walks every time up against the Brewers. He doesn't swing and miss. He's just impossible. He's an impossible at bat, and I thought he was a decent player coming in this year, but looks like he's sort of taken an entire step, maybe a quantum leap even for Perdomo. Good player, very good player, and one of the peskiest at-bats, I think, for Brewers fans.
Famously took some key walks in the wild card series against Arizona a couple years ago that really haunted this team. So yeah, he's been a problem. A couple things we did not touch on in 3 Up, 3 Down that we could have. Oliver Dunn made a diving play Wednesday and a diving play Sunday with a really nice one. Made it to the MLB official Twitter account, tweeted out some nice defense from Oliver Dunn. Still kind of waiting on him a little bit, whether or not this team has a third baseman, to be quite frank, because Vinny Capper has really struggled. But defensively, a couple really nice plays from Ollie Dunn. Logan Henderson had a great outing Wednesday at Class AAA Nashville, AAA Nashville. That is a very promising development for him. I might need him. Jason Lane got hit with a catcher's throw on Wednesday, bounced off of the bat or something of the batter and into Jason Lane. Watch out, Jason Lane for strays. That was kind of random. And I think that's it. Reese Hoskins had a nice play after a bad play on Friday in the field. That was a little bit of a mini redemption arc in a 7-0 win. But that's all I got for 3 Up, 3 Down. Let's now move in to a look to the Brewers' past. We're going back in time, but not too far. It's Remember When. All right, riffing on the Jose Quintana debut this week. I wanted to go back to some of the outings that Quintana had against the Brewers. I want to hone in on one specifically, one very good outing for the Milwaukee Brewers. Of course, Quintana pitched for the Mets in Game 3 of the NL Wildcard Series last year. And before that, though he hadn't faced the Brewers in the playoffs, he did face them in Game 163 against the Chicago Cubs, 2018. October 1st, 2018, the one-game bonus regular season game that the Brewers had at Wrigley Field that enabled them to win 3-1, win the division. Ultimately, that set up the Cubs for an early playoff exit. Meanwhile, the Brewers went to the NLCS. It was glorious, but the Brewers had to get through quite the hurdle to get through Jose Quintana pitching that game. Now, Quintana faced the Brewers 7 times in 2018. Think about that. That's ridiculous. 7 times in 2018. And you know, in 3 of those games, the Brewers lost 3-0 in 3 of them. I was thinking about this when the Brewers were up 3-0 on Arizona kind of late in that game before they added some runs to blow that thing open. But April 8th, you know, right away at the beginning of the season, 3-0 loss to the Cubs. This is for the Brewers. Quintana, 3 hits in 6 innings. April 28th, later that month, 3-0 loss to the Cubs. 2 hits, 7 innings. He's getting better. June 11th, you know what? How about a 7-2 loss to the Cubs? 2 runs, 4 hits, 6 innings. Same old. August, though, Brewers, actually, they got a win. They won 7-0. Jose Quintana, showing that he was mortal, gave up 5 runs and 6 hits in 5 innings. Maybe they're breaking through? No. September 5th, it's another win for the Cubs. 6-4. 2 runs, 5 hits, 6 2/3 innings. September 11th, another 3-0 win. This is the home stretch when the Brewers really need these wins. 3 hits, 6 2/3 innings. But then October 1st, here it is. one run, six hits, five innings. Pretty good. Pretty good numbers. Five innings. Brewers have to go to Wrigley because of this one game playoff. The Cubs had won the season series 11-9. You'll probably remember that. That is why Wrigley got to host game 163. But there was a tricky aspect to that because this isn't a game that was on the schedule. A lot of Brewers fans showed up at Wrigley Field. I'm sure people do remember this. You know, Wrigley, the American Family Field or Miller Park as it was at the time, got that reputation as Miller Park North. And this was definitely Miller Park South, Wrigley North, I should say. But this was Miller Park South. A lot of Brewers fans there. The Brewers had won seven straight games to force that tie in the division. They went 19-7 in September. Quintana, he had a 4.09 ERA that year. He wasn't special. I mean, that's solid, but like to beat the Brewers as badly as he did, just totally indicative of the success that he has had. Christian Yelich had a two-out single against Quintana that gave the Brewers a 1-0 lead in the third inning. Javi Baez made a really nice play on Kane to keep Orlando Arcia from scoring, but Yelich then scored him with two outs. So that was a big clutch two-out hit. Anthony Rizzo tied the game in the fifth with a home run. That was the first hit of the game. Actually, only the second base runner that Yoli Chiesin had given up for the Brewers. Of course, the yeoman starting pitcher for the Brewers that year. Home plate umpire Fielding Culbreth gave the Cubs Jason Hayward a third strike call on strike two, kind of a demonstrative third strike call. It was only strike two. And then on the next pitch, Hayward hit the ball to the wall. Cubs fans, because of course they did, thought it was gone, but it ended up kind of dying right at the right field wall. Yelich makes the catch, so that keeps things tied at one. Xavier Cedeno, I don't know if you remember him. He faced two batters. It did not go well. He had a hit and a walk, hit surrendered and a walk. Eight pitches, two strikes, and one of them was hit to right. One of those two strikes. It was not good. So that brought in Joaquin Soria. He comes in, strikes out Baez on a 3-2 pitch. That ends the inning. There were two outs when Cedeno came in and nobody on. Soria comes in to get that last out. That's when you really start to hear Brewers fans get loud at Wrigley Field. Jesse Chavez, the guy who is still pitching, I think he finally retired. I don't actually know. But with the Pirates, he had given up the Grand Slam in 2008 to Ryan Braun. So here he is 10 years later. That was, by the way, the last week of the season. Most people remember that. 10 years later, facing the Brewers, and he gets six straight outs. He gets a double play after Quintana left the game. And so he kind of keeps the Brewers in check. But Corey Knebel works a 1-2-3 seventh against Rizzo, Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant, Tommy La Stella. So then we go to the eighth. Orlando Arcia singles. Pinch hitter Domingo Santana. He'd been sent to AAA in June, but he's back. He doubles off Justin Wilson. So that puts runners in second and third. Lorenzo Cain, go-ahead single against Steve Cishek. Santana stopped at third. Yelich struck out for the second out, but then Randy Rosario. Yelich had started the game 3-for-3, but then Ryan Braun singles off former Brewers pitcher Brandon Kinsler. A lot of pitchers. We certainly don't have that anymore with the three-batter minimum. That gave the Brewers a 3-1 lead. Josh Hader checks in. He gets six outs, two strikeouts in the eighth. Yes, Josh Hader threw multiple innings once upon a time. Jeremy Jeffress, their closer, was unavailable, kind of mysteriously. He had like a minor injury, but it was sort of the surprise. So Hader worked both innings to get through it. Jamie Garcia, another left-hander that has given the Brewers fits, very similar to Quintana in his career. He actually works the ninth inning. I completely forgot about that. The Brewers got two on against Jaime Garcia, did not score. And in the ninth, Josh Hader registers those two outs. Anthony Rizzo hit a fly ball that I was sure was gone. It looked hit very well, but Keon Broxton settled underneath it. That was it. Brewers win 3-1. They win the division. They go on to face the Rockies in the NLDS after the Rockies beat the Cubs in the wild card game. The Brewers win that series 3-0. They go to the seventh game against the Dodgers. You know that part. They lose at Miller Park. We'll call it Miller Park. That's what it was. And end up having to settle for a very fun run. Finally breaking through against Mr. Quintana. Now he finally wears that Brewers jersey. And boy, was he a sight for sore eyes on Friday. All right. Kurt, what is your relationship to game 163? If I say game 163, what does that mean to you?
I watched it.
Yes. That's it?
I mean, that's probably one of the more enjoyable Brewers games in franchise history, which probably is kind of depressing.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, like, it was a very, very good moment, I think, for the Brewers, and shouldn't be poo-pooed by my stupid takes, but and like the context of it matters too, right? The Cubs were the Cubs at this point. They were still the, you know, in their World Series dynasty era, and the Brewers kind of unseated them in that moment, and it was the start of this run of Brewers baseball, which has been fantastic by Brewers standards. But the Brewers standards are sort of winning game 163s and not winning World Series. And I think Brewers fans know this. I think they know this.
Yeah, maybe. I do think it's wild that Quintana pitched that game. And then last year in the playoffs, and a very memorable loss, playoff loss. Not that Quintana was the center of that, but game three, crazy. All right, that is our look back at Remember When. Now we'll close it down before Kurt gets on an airplane. Kurt, before you leave us, before Sky Harbor sends you into the air, give us your take of the week. Here it is. It is Kurt Blanche.
I feel like it has to be an airport take, right? Since I'm here.
You've given us airport takes before.
Oh, so I got to go off the airport take here.
No. Kurt, this is your time. You do what you want.
No, okay. No, I'll diverge without any planning on this. Everyone talks about Pablo Sanchez as the greatest baseball player and backyard baseball character, but also one of the best video game characters. And I'm here to tell the nation, tell the audience, tell the Microbrew faithful that he's not even the best player in backyard baseball. It's Pete Wheeler, folks. It's Pete Wheeler. You know the number one most important skill in backyard baseball for your player to have? It's speed. It's 100% speed. Because nothing is worse than having a team of guys and girls who can't run. You're going to not be able to make plays in the field. You're not going to be able to get to their bunts and their little dinkers and dunkers. And you're not going to be able to turn those gap hits into doubles. You're not going to be able to steal. You're not going to be able to bunt. You're just going to get thrown out a bunch. So that's the reality of the matter. And Pete is not only the fastest player in backyard baseball, JR, but pretty good contact skill. Like, he's a pretty good line drive hitter. So you got a bunch of wiggle room, and he can also pitch a little bit. And obviously that speed plays in the outfield too. Or if you do like I do and put him at short or second, and then he's ranging on the whole area. That's the facts. I'm about to go on this plane and play backyard baseball on my phone for 3 hours or until I fall asleep.
Incredible. I have to confess, I'm not a backyard baseball guy. I'm not a video game guy. I kind of stopped around like Sonic the Hedgehog when Sega Genesis stopped being a thing. But I will say, as a former Nintendo fan playing RBI baseball, big Vince Coleman, who had what you are talking about, speed in spades, that was very important to me, because all those little players, they could all hit to some degree, and it was really Vince Coleman put the ball in play, he was getting on first base. So that is me trying to relate to you, backyard baseball player.
Thank you. I know you can, it's fine, but like Akhman Khan and Amir Khan, the Khan brothers.
I don't know what that means. Dingers.
They can hit some dingers too. Like, they got good bats. They got power in there. So I can find my power in other areas. You can't replace Pete Wheeler. I'm taking him with the first pick every time. You can have your Pablo Sanchez. Give me Pete.
Okay. That sounds good. Kurt, I want to know, can we follow you all the way into the plane? Can you sign off once you're sitting in row 27, seat B, in the middle of the course?
That would be pretty good content. Maybe Microbrew Extra. I think we've got like 4 minutes until boarding starts here. And unfortunately, I think I have to use the men's room.
So well, you know where it is. They told you. They told you where it is. You know where it is. She's saying right now where that bathroom is. You are good to go, Kurt.
I was going to say we can't go in there. And that might be an announcement for my plane. I have no idea. I didn't hear it.
I have to let you go.
Let's hope I get home tonight.
I have to let you go. I'm sad. I'm sad, but we got to get going.
I can still see my plane here. It hasn't left yet.
Yeah, that's perfect. All right. I'm going to dovetail this into an interview with Jake Bowers, Brewers first baseman, that I recorded on the last homestand. Enjoyed talking to him about his big home run in the playoffs last year, among other topics. His pitching, of course, is a topic. So check that out here at the very end. And Kurt, I'm going to say goodbye to you, but it's been a pleasure. Kurt, thank you. Thank you. And get home safely. We'll talk again next week.
All right. Ta-ta.
My guest is Jake Bowers, first baseman for the Milwaukee Brewers. You've seen him on the pitching mound lately. You've seen him, of course, in the lineup as well, his second year with the team. We're going to go back to the beginning, though. You are from California. I read that you didn't play varsity for 2 years until you were a junior in high school. There was something too about the changing bats to make them safer, that maybe helped you out along the way. How was your varsity, I guess, baseball experience?
No, I just didn't play varsity until my junior year. There was really nothing crazy or special about it. Just played at a competitive school and a competitive program, and yeah, spots were full, and sure. I played JV my sophomore year.
All right. And then you had a chance to go to the University of Hawaii, which is pretty cool. How tough of a call was that to not go to the islands and instead end up in pro ball?
It ended up not being too difficult of a decision. I committed to play at Hawaii before I knew I was going to get drafted, or I even had the potential to get drafted. Once it became clear that I was going to get drafted somewhere, I think my mind was pretty set on breaking into professional baseball.
Okay. Your first hit is off of Felix Hernandez. Is that right? Mm-hmm. First hit. And then you had a walk-off homer later that month, or very early on.
Yeah.
And then I believe there's a play where you slide in front of a tag coming home on a walk-off, I think. Maybe I might have the timeline off. I'm curious, what is the better experience for you, hitting a walk-off homer or actually being at the plate for, you know, a different style of walk-off?
No, hitting a walk-off homer for sure. Right. Yeah, there's not many feelings like that in this game, let alone sports in general. So, yeah, my answer will always be hitting a walk-off homer for sure.
Okay, so I want to ask a little bit about your pitching, and then I want to talk to you about the home run last year in the playoffs. Do you know what your ERA is? I have to think, now that you've had, I think it's six outings, you probably know, right?
I don't.
You don't?
I don't. I know it's a zero this year.
It is indeed. It's 3.00, which is very good. Six innings. I feel like that's a pretty good sample size at this point. I know we laugh about that stuff, but with the rosters are limited to the number of pitchers you can have. You got four appearances last year. You're probably going to get more than what you've got already this year. Do you work on it? Is this something that you take seriously in any way, shape, or form, or is it purely just a random thing that you just don't give any thought to?
No, I don't necessarily think it's something that you give zero thought to. It's not something that I particularly enjoy doing. But kind of pride myself on being a team guy and trying to help the team out in any way that I can. And so if that means eating an inning in a blowout game to save an arm in our bullpen, then, you know, I will do it. As far as working on it, I mean, just the competitor in me is always going to want to get the guy out.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not out on the mound trying to throw BP. Like, I'm trying to hit spots. I'm trying to make it uncomfortable for the hitter in any way that I can. I don't know how effective it is realistically. I mean,
you got Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton out. I mean, not bad.
I seem to get outs. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, though, it's not something that I necessarily want to do, but it's something that I will do to help the Brewers in any way. Yeah.
Do you feel like you're the guy now that you've been pigeonholed into this, oh, we need a position player to pitch? Or are there other guys on this team that you think could actually do it, would want to do it?
I don't know. It's not something we talk about. Obviously, sure. It's if we're in that situation, it's less than ideal. So it's not something that we're sitting around the clubhouse talking about what position player is gonna come into pitch. But yeah. I mean, like I said, I mean, if that's part of my role, that's part of my role.
Last year, this home run in the playoffs, I remember you saying it was, even after the game, it ended badly, of course, but at the moment, it was as big a moment in your life as you've had, you know, including the birth of your daughter. As now that some dust has settled, what are sort of the images that you take away from that moment? What are the, like, is it the sounds? Is it the way it hit your bat or anything like that? Like, what are the things that really stick out about that moment?
I think the biggest thing that I take away from that moment is the mental preparation that went into it and my mental state at the time of the at-bat. It was probably the most focused I've ever been on a baseball field. It was the most clarity I've had throughout an at-bat, throughout really the entire game, thinking about the at-bat that I was going to get. Even with the uncertainty that I might not get in the game.
Yeah.
So I walked up there with confidence. I walked up there with clarity and got the best result you could ask for. And I think what it did for me was unlocked something with the way that I think about the game and the way that I approach my at-bats. And it's something that I worked on this spring to try and kind of cultivate more and more often. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm really enjoying the process of just trying to build that kind of mental foundation going into my at-bats. And so I definitely draw from that experience daily to kind of remind myself of what it takes to succeed in this league.
as far as your preparation goes, he throws a changeup that you hit out. He'd thrown one earlier in the at bat, and I think he fouled it off. I don't actually remember if that was a ball or you had to have known it was coming, maybe, or maybe not. I mean, how did you have a sense that it would be that Jose Budo would be the guy you'd face, that the changeup would be the pitch that you'd be seeing in that spot?
Yeah, he was warming up for a good 2-3 innings before coming into the game, yeah. And I knew that he was one of the matchups that they had for me. And I faced him in game one, and he struck me out looking on a changeup. Hmm. And I knew the changeup was his pitch. And so, you know, you talk about confidence and clarity. I was in the cage getting ready to go in, and I turned to Eric Haas, and I told him, I'm going to get his changeup. Like, I'm going to get it. Like, I'm going to hit it. And, yeah, so, I mean, when I say that's kind of the experience that I'm drawing from, that's really kind of what I'm talking about. It's just the preparation and the confidence and everything that went into that that led to that result. But yeah, I mean, it was always the changeup, and then I knew once it got to 3-2, I called time and stepped out, and I kind of like thought to myself, like, all right, I mean, well, here comes the changeup. Yeah. Not that I was sitting on it or anything, but just definitely had it in the back of my head and just executed the swing.
What did you say to Sal right after that? Do you remember?
I don't remember what I said to him after. I know what I said to him before. And, sure. You know, he was on deck and I was walking up to the plate and I turned to him. I just said, hey, man, let's have some fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it was a very tense game. Obviously, 0-0 in an elimination game in the seventh inning. Mm-hmm. Things were tense. And so just tried to cut it a little bit. And, I mean, it put a smile on his face, put a smile on my face. And then, you know, obviously next pitch he hits it further than I did.
Yeah.
And so that's something that he doesn't let me live down. And no, it was a good moment for both of us.
All right, last one. I'm curious just how your offseason developed in your own words. I don't know if you thought you might be back or if there was a point where, you know, you restarted conversations with the Brewers. Like, how did it all develop for you?
Yeah, so, I mean, first it was just testing the market, seeing if I was going to be able to get a guaranteed big league deal somewhere. They weren't giving them out this winter very easily. It seems like there was a lot of guys that that was the case for. And so once that became evident, there was really nowhere else I wanted to go. If I had to sign a minor league deal, it was always going to be here. So I was excited to come back. I was excited to get back to work in spring training. I think the comfortability of the clubhouse, the comfortability of the coaching staff and the support staff and everybody around me really kind of let me work on what I needed to work on in spring training and get my game to a point that I don't think it's necessarily been at before. And you know, I think that translated to making the team, and now that we're in season, hopefully it translates to having the best season of my career.
All right, Jake Bowers, first baseman for the Milwaukee Brewers. Thank you so much, sir.